Welcome to the edges of darkness. Light a candle, say our name. Sit back and listen to Haunted NTL's Bloody Marys.
Welcome back to Bloody Marys. It's Pars here and Evie and Nicole.
Hey.
We're back talking today about American Psycho by Bret Easton Ellis. If you don't know anything about this story, take this as a huge trigger warning. If anything triggers you, it's probably going to come up in this book. From domestic violence to animal abuse, it's all there. And I have no idea how to introduce this book. I found this story masterful, and there's really nothing else like it. It's like the transgressive book of transgressive books. But, and you guys liked it too, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to think of a good way to, like, describe the book. It's really obnoxious, but once you start, it's really hard to stop.
Yeah. Really hard to stop.
For sure. Yeah, it's beginning to read it, I was getting very bored and very irritated with the constant description of what everyone is wearing, which felt like it was most of the first part. And then just so subtly, you know, pulling a jacket out of a closet and there's a child's coat in there, might have had chocolate on it, and then we just move on. Like it's nothing. From there, I was hooked.
Yeah, it was very masterfully crafted. Like, I don't know how you put something like that together.
You had to have so much confidence in writing that just because of all the description about the clothes and about the music and about skincare routine and all that crap.
Right, like the research that went into it. And yeah, like the vision, you can tell the vision was completely clear. There's nothing I've ever read that's even close to this. Like this is pure horror. It's perfect horror, in my opinion.
I really think so, yeah. It was just absolutely, the main character, Bateman, is just completely devoid of any sort of humanity.
That's what he thinks of himself, right? Like, that's what I got.
That's kind of what he thinks of himself. I wouldn't say that he is devoid. It's more of like...
maybe repressed? Is that the right word?
Repressed
feels right.
Like the good in him was almost beaten out of him through the cruel things he's seen of just humans doing to other humans.
Well, and the sickening overcompetitiveness with his brother certainly played a part in that, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, look, with his mom too, like there was some tension there that didn't really go into, which was perfect. But yeah, so like if you don't know anything about the story of American Psycho, like we're gonna cover spoilers for sure, but basically we just follow a guy for years, isn't it? Years.
It sure feels like it, because everyone towards the end has moved on with their lives and has got stuff done.
Yeah, like everyone else. And I think that was one of the sadder parts, is by the end of it, like our friends are like getting married and buying houses and having kids, and he's still worrying about getting reservations at a certain place for dinner.
Oh man, Courtney. I felt for Courtney big time. Everybody around him, it's everybody who is focusing on this conformity, this blending and fitting in. There's literally no individuality.
Oh, yeah, that speech where he has that political talk, and I'm just like, it's just so vapid and so placating, because he actually says stuff that's like very against the grain. The thing that stands out to me most was how he was talking about we can't have abortions because we don't want to kill children and violate their rights, and then he immediately moves on to we have to make sure that women retain all their rights. And it's like, you can't really argue one side or another. Those go hand in hand. And so he's basically just spewing words at that point, and it's so sad to listen to.
Yeah, maybe I'm a little bit psychopath because I felt no sympathy for Courtney whatsoever. And in fact, I would say I spent a good amount of the book kind of hoping Paul would kill some of the people he was interacting with because they were horrible, horrible people. Really, I can't think of a character except possibly Courtney's fiance.
Caruthers?
Yeah. I felt so bad for him.
I cried in that scene.
Oh, the one where, in the store?
Yeah. Oh,
yes, I felt so bad.
Oh, yeah. Bateman started kicking him. On one hand, I kind of felt bad for him. And on another hand, it's like, dude, you're dodging a bullet here. You might want to suck it up a little bit.
Yeah, you don't want to touch that. And at the same time, it's like the whole time through, it felt like Paul just wanted someone to care about him. And here's someone who cared about him, but...
Oh, Patrick Bateman?
Yeah. Oh, Patrick, not Paul. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Paul was the other... The, hey, Paul, with the axe, the Jared Leto in the movie.
Yeah. Right.
But I think that kind of plays into its brilliance, is that I can see myself as, at one point in my life, being all of the characters. You know what I'm saying? At one point in my life, I would have cared about how I present myself. Or, in certain situations as it is now, I do care about how I present myself. But it's that obsession with it that kind of shuts out who you are as a person and makes, it takes you on this cycle, this spiral into eventually thinking that you're the problem.
One thing that stood out in the book for me was how, Patrick Bateman's definitely the problem in a lot of it, but he's very, very forthcoming about him being a horrible, psychopathic, murderous person, and nobody listens to him. He will say that, I want to bash in your face, I want to stab you, slit your throat. He'll say all this horrible shit, and everyone is just talking on different wavelengths. They're going on about the Wardell salad. They're going on about where they're going to score their cocaine.
Begging for help, and everybody's on something else.
Yeah, it felt like the first season of Seinfeld did this very well, in that you would see the characters, they're talking to each other, they're interacting with each other, but they are having completely different conversations that have nothing to do with the person they are talking to. And that's what it felt like this whole book through. Mm. And I have to say, I don't think I related to any of them because they were all very money-driven. And let's be fair, I'm a fiction author. Money doesn't play a lot into my life. So, I have never been able to afford anything name brand. I have been Walmart my entire life. And so just the amount of money that these people put into nothing. They probably spent more on one dinner than I spent decorating my house.
Yeah, and then it was $500 totals, and they're just okay, whatever about it.
Yeah, and then they would fuck with these. I'm going to swear a lot in this, and I'm not going to apologize even a little bit. Yeah. The way they fucked with homeless people, all of them, dangling dollars in front of them, putting them back in their wallets, that alone, if I was going to kill somebody, it would probably be because I would see them do some lame-ass shit like that in front of me. That would be when I would kill them.
Oh, can I just say, I actually love those scenes in the book. Not because I agree with them and I think those are funny, but because I think that's a very great representation of how people act towards homeless people, their attitudes, especially when Bateman's stopping and he's like, why don't you get a job? And it's like, wait, what are you doing, Bateman? And he goes why don't you get a job? I lost my job. He's like, oh, were you drinking? Were you on drugs? No, I just lost it. It was layover.
Laid off, yeah.
Yeah.
I noticed, and it was really subtle throughout the whole book, and it was like Ellis would say something that would make you think. For example, when there was a scene where you were questioning if Bateman's sexuality is not what he's showing.
The Bono scene?
I think it was right after he was going to choke Caruthers. I don't remember. But Ellis would say something and then he would kind of verify it subtly a little bit later. And it was just this huge suppression, this self-oppression of our inner desires. And it was a subtle motion toward Patrick Bateman doing these horrible, cruel things to people to help them. Mm-hmm. That's kind of bold. What do you guys think of that?
I think you have a point with that. I think that many times he was trying to push people he cared about away because he was afraid he was going to hurt them, whether physically or metaphorically. I want to talk about that at length, but it definitely felt like he would get close to someone and he would try to push them away. In particular, his girlfriend, was it Patty?
Evelyn?
Jean. Right?
Evelyn.
Oh. They were all a bunch of them.
he had so many fucking girlfriends.
He really did. The one he took like out of state and bought her a dog and then...
Oh yeah, that was Evelyn that he killed later and then they forgot about the dog. They just forgot they had one.
Yeah, that was messed up.
Yeah, that's
a lot of drugs. it felt very much like he was trying to get her away from him so she would be safe.
I didn't get that from that. Like, I got it from Jean, his receptionist, which I just felt bad for her towards the end because when she's talking, he's like hooking himself onto what she's saying and relating to it so much that it seems like he's almost galvanizing her. And then all of a sudden it's...
Yeah, that was really, really well written.
Oh, yeah. Oh, goodness. And the scene where he's like fantasizing about running through the fields with her, buying balloons just to let them free. And like, oh, that's so beautiful. He is going to cut off her skin and wear it like a suit, like Buffalo Bill. That's what's going to happen here.
I know. It's really sad.
Oh, no, I got that song stuck in my head.
What song?
The Buffalo Bill Dancing in the Mirror song.
Oh,
I'd fuck me. Would you fuck me?
That's what's up. That's what's up.
But with Evelyn and Courtney and stuff, the sense that I got was they looked good with him. And so that's why he was doing it. Like, he didn't like mm-hmm. Caruthers, so he took Courtney because why not? And not to mention, Evelyn was sleeping with some other dude, so he didn't really give a shit about her. And he was just doing it to keep up affairs. And then once she's, I want to get married, he's like, hell no.
Mm-hmm.
And backpedaling on that as far as possible.
Mm-hmm. And probably one of the grosser scenes of the book.
Oh, man, those murder scenes were so real, you guys.
I actually meant the urinal cake, but...
Oh, yeah, that was a good scene, too.
Oh.
They were all good scenes.
They were. I love it at the beginning where we're just bouncing all around because there's just so much to love and talk about.
Yeah. But,
well, and there wasn't really like a plot. So it's not like we can go like plot by plot, like here's what happened in this story. Because it was a lot of it was just kind of torture.
Just pure transgressive.
Porn.
Great. Oh, torture porn?
For sure. This wasn't like House of 1,000 Corpses. This was classy torture porn. I just said like, that sentence.
I was gonna say like the scenery was classy, or was it classy because like there was meaning and intent behind it?
Because the meaning and the intent. Okay. It wasn't just vulgarity for vulgarity's sake. It's
yeah, it was really done well for sure. Mm-hmm. Did you guys watch the movie too?
I did not.
Okay.
I was really surprised going back and watching the movie because I had watched it first like in bits and pieces a long time ago in my childhood, and the movie just doesn't hold up the same way as the book. Like, you actually need to read and experience the book to get the full feels of it.
100%. Yeah.
Wait, I want to take a step back. For you real. Watched that movie as a child?
It was on TV a lot.
The movie must be a lot different than the book.
No. I remember the hooker scenes. I very well remember the hooker scenes and murders in there. Well, there isn't, like, a rat going through a lady's arch and then eating herself out, but...
That one got to me. That one got to me. I felt that one in my chest.
Just the things he does to animals and somewhere in else. His book. Oh. Yeah.
The movie I had watched several times... you know, in the previous years. And then I watched it again 3/4 through. My headset might die. I'll be back if it does. but like 3/4 through the book, I watched it again with my husband because he wanted to watch it with me. That movie can stand fine on its own as itself, you know, as maybe a nod to the book. But yes, I agree with Evie that this book or this novel should definitely be experienced, especially if you liked the movie. You will get so much more out of reading the story, but you should watch the movie too. I mean it's just not the same.
Well, and I think that's fair for a lot of things. Watching something transition into a different medium, I mean, there are just certain things you can do in one medium that you can't do in another. A great example is Stephen King mentioned in, I believe it was Dance Macabre, that as writers, we never have to pull the curtain back. We never have to show the zipper on the back of the monster. But it's different in a movie, of course, because you have to bring that forward eventually. And you always run the risk of it being sillier than it was built up in the reader's imagination. Though I can definitely say nothing in this book was sillier than I thought it was going to be. It was all just as horrific as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. Yeah, I was expecting more fun.
I know. They had, like, a weird thing with the homosexuality in the story. Like, they're obviously very much against it, but the people were the ones against it, so it wasn't really doing it, saying anything bad about homosexuals. And there's this weird thing where Patrick Bateman is at that Genesis concert. It was Genesis, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he makes eye contact with Bono, and then he just has this, like, homoerotic daydream, and it's like he brushes it off, like, nothing, even though with Caruthers, when Caruthers was hitting on him, he was like terrified.
And there was that scene too, or that was that there was a hint to
kill Caruthers with. He's like,
hey, can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. I had to redo my headsets. There was that scene too with that, like, hinted toward there being a past with him and Paul Allen.
They had so many scenes.
It was near the beginning. It was close. It was like right when we were getting introduced to Paul Allen. You're talking about a sexual, like, homosexuality.
Yeah, the character is treated badly, but it's a very prevalent in the book, and it's not treated as a bad thing. It's just kind of like a theme running throughout, and so I guess I was kind of trying to see where you guys got.
Yeah, because throughout the whole book, he keeps interacting with men that he believes are gay. And he's, like, legitimately freaked out and scared about it. It was really weird.
Like, it was a part of him that he did not want to have be a part of him.
Mm.
I wouldn't be surprised if that was it, especially with the whole Caruthers. Like, you guys were talking about the way he was beating up on him, but he decided not to actually kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you would think,
right,
that with all of the stuff he does and Caruthers comes at him like that, you would think that would put him on the list, because even with women, there's like, I wonder if he just equates like sex and killing, because the sex scenes in here, even though they get really graphic and really graphic, it's like they're never sexy. They are never ever sexy.
Yeah, it does not seem like anybody is enjoying any of it.
I had that thought as well, that he's equating sex with the killing of them, or that that was his way of processing that sex that he had. What'd you guys think about how it ended?
I loved it. It was so good. And that, like, I think that's the big question, is how much of this really happened.
I know. So throughout the entire book, guys, the people don't know who each other are. They will confuse themselves with someone else all the fucking time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so even though Bateman kills some people, they're like, I don't know who you're talking about, because we just had dinner last week. And it's like, are you sure?
Right.
Nothing in his life is real, really. And it just translates so awesomely in the metaphor, because you don't know what is real. Like, did he kill those people? No. There's a few spots where didn't he like blow up police cars, do this huge giant chase?
Yeah. Like, I have a hard time believing that happened and it like wasn't on the news and like nothing came of this. And the stuff that he claimed to do to bodies in his apartment, like, how did that happen in this very expensive apartment complex and no one's complaining about the smell? Because that would smell horribly. Yeah.
And then when he goes back to Paul Allen's apartment and the lady's showing it, you still, as a reader, didn't leave that chapter knowing whether she was looking at him because she knows that she knows what happened here and she had to clean it up, or like,
or because he's just acting freaking weird. Right.
It's just so good, so well written.
Mm-hmm.
You know, towards the end during that like chase scene and stuff, how all of a sudden it switched to like third person and Bateman is referring to himself as Patrick.
Love that.
Yeah, that was well done.
Yeah, very smooth.
Yeah, I really think that helped solidify the fact that he definitely is, whether he killed anybody or not, psychopathic, and he needs to be seeking help, obviously. But that definitely, it felt almost like an out-of-body experience. Like, he wasn't him anymore. He was watching this other person that he was only vaguely familiar with doing these horrible things.
And that ties back into the ending where he's talking to his lawyer and he's like, Patrick Bateman is a spineless blah, 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 who couldn't do this or that. Mm-hmm. And he has no identity.
Yeah.
It's just, he is 100% so taken. He's just not there. It's, I love this book so much.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that kind of brings up the question with him, you know, is he psychopathic? With how we got our chapters on the music, he was forcing us to hear these tangents because nobody else listens to these tangents. Makes you kind of wonder if he, the character, Patrick Bateman, is on the spectrum or neurodivergent.
I thought about that, but I was leaning more toward some type of psycho. I don't know if it's psychopathic or psychotic. I think it's leaning more towards psychopathic, only because generally people who are on the spectrum have an idea, and this is a generalization, of their own emotions, whereas Bateman seemed to mirror other people's emotions. And he would, you know, he would laugh when other people laughed. He would get angry when other people got angry. He very much mirrored that.
Yeah, in the social, in like social interactions, I think that's pretty common. I think females kind of, I don't know enough about it to say, but it's masking is what that is. And it could just be the way I'm interpreting, you know what I'm saying? But I thought that those scenes that you're talking about were also written really good for this character. There was times when, like at the end, when he went into the building and he saw the attendant there who was going to tell him to sign in, I'm trying to figure out words to say to this because he's not here. He's thinking about other things. I think everybody does that, but like people on the spectrum, I would say, kind of do that a lot more often.
A lot of it read like being drunk. Like that kind of flow through of just reactionary.
Oh, that, because he was actually not only on like cocaine and drunk. He was drunk and had a lot of cocaine all the time. But as the book goes on, you read more and more about all the crap he's taking. Like, he's taking lithium, he's stealing some from Courtney. Like, they're all on some sort of antidepressant, antipsychotic, I'm taking these pills to feel something thing.
Or to feel nothing.
Or to feel nothing.
One thing I thought that was very striking was the just one or two shining moments where Bateman suddenly burst out and realized, has this moment of humanity. Early in the book, one of his horrible friends says something very racist about a black gentleman, and Bateman just turns around and says, are you kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me? Did you just say that? And it's just like, whoa, you just said and thought all kinds of horrible racist shit. Where is this coming from? What are you doing? Like, you're right, but pot kettle? Yeah,
but that's the thing that I think it is that he knows it's wrong, but he is still like partaking in that because he can partake it. Justifies it. Like, there's like two different doorman, right? I remember for the different buildings, like one was black and he had all these horrible thoughts about him. The other one was this fat white dude, And he was just like, I feel so bad for this guy. Like, I feel for him. And it's like, ostensibly, this fat white dude is actually being a less helpful right. than the other guy. Or just mm-hmm. as unhelpful. So
it's like it comes out opposite when he feels compassion, when he feels, you know, for somebody, he likes somebody. It's like he gives them the opposite feeling. And it's almost like he justifies it as a way to help them.
There was this one scene with him reacting to one of the checkout people of when he's actually renting a movie. When he's actually yeah. renting and returning a movie.
Yeah.
That kind of got me where he's trying to explain to her what he's checking out, and it's like he's about to have a panic attack.
Yeah, and he looked down at her shoes. That part got me. Like, first off, I felt for that poor chick, because I would never want to be the poor person, like,
yeah,
checking out someone's porn. I've worked in health food stores before, and I had to sell things like Extends and other products that I don't want to go into, and that was embarrassing enough. Like, right. it was one thing to, like, put on a professional face and handle that, especially the poor gentleman who came in and bought Extends every single month. God bless you, guy. I don't know where you are, but I hope you're okay. But, like, there's a huge difference between that and checking out some guy who's buying porn and who, on top of buying porn, is being a ridiculous asshole and then starts having a full-out panic attack in my store. Like, I never want to be that poor woman.
Yeah, everybody that we saw, like, I did not want to be that person. Like, I felt for everybody.
Yeah, the poor waitresses that he's, like, objectifying. If he said hard body one more time.
Hard body.
Oh, it's great. They have this discussion about how a woman's useless unless they have a hard body. And that's, if they are smart, that must mean it's because they're ugly and they have nothing to do except try to make up for their deficiency.
And they just, yeah, as long as they give you sex whenever you want it.
If you think like that, we're going to kill you. We're just going to hunt you down and kill you, by the way.
Yeah,
just...
you're not going to survive in this world, dude. Just, like try to evolve.
Maybe a little bit.
Yeah. So, in fairness, like, I have never really come in contact with a person who behaved like that. Like, I've been catcalled, but it's never been anything like that. Like, and I think that was part of it, is that these people... It feels like all of it was a parody. And again, maybe it's because I live in a small little town where everybody is hella broke, and nobody can get away with acting like that. Like, it felt like these people weren't real and were way too real at the same time.
Do you think this issue or these issues of the conformity are only present in upper class?
Oh, no. No, I think that's a universal trait. I think we all want to feel like we belong.
That's absolutely true. And that's actually kind of why I feel like he had that panic attack in the video store, is because he was trying to relate to the middle class, lower class person there, and he couldn't. She didn't give a shit about his watch. She didn't give a shit about right. what suit he was wearing. So he was trying to make conversation about the movie, which she didn't really know about. And so he was just breaking down, trying to have that connection.
Yeah, that makes a point there too, that, you know, he was desperately starving. And I think a lot of them were. But he was just desperate for a human connection.
Mm-hmm.
Completely desperate. And with everything on the internet now that kind of connects us but distances us even further, do you think that people are still dealing with this today? Like, because what, this was placed in, what, the 80s?
Yeah. I think so, because I don't think it has anything to do really with a geographical location. I'm a big believer that the internet helps us all be part of a worldwide community. I know I wouldn't know any of you people if we didn't have the internet, and I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. But I think there are some people that are going to have a hard time forming those type of connections no matter the circumstance, no matter the platform. And that's really sad.
Yeah.
But I think he would have had just as much trouble, if not more, in today's day and age.
Yeah. What do you think, Evie?
So I think with the internet, I just can't believe how relevant this book still is, even though it was done in the 80s. Mm-hmm. But with the internet, you have a platform where you can wear a mask and you can say things anonymously without any sort of repercussion, in the most part, or not knowing what kind of harm you do. And I think that to some degree, even though we're all connected, that harm is still reflected in the book. Because sure, nobody out loud will say something like all a woman's good for is sex, but on the internet with like incels and all those douchey people, you will get people who say that, and you'll have them all cluster together and just be toxic and spreading it out from there. And so there is a certain issue about the communication of the internet, but it doesn't really affect this book because the book is still relevant. I kind of drifted off there. I'm sorry. Oh, except for this one thing that made me laugh every time I read it. The compact discs he always listened to.
Yeah. Like, oh my goodness, give this man an iPod. It will blow his mind.
For real, yeah.
So I think it's still relevant mostly because I don't think I've been in any way subtle about my political affiliations. I really don't like Trump. And I love the thought that Bateman idolizes him.
Everything superficial, everything that everything is pathetic
fake
and sad.
He read his book, yeah.
He worships Trump in this. It's like, oh my god, is that Ivanka? It's like, where? No, that's not. How could you mistake her for blah, blah, blah? It's like, is that Trump in that limo? Is it? It's actually adorable.
Yeah, a little bit. Oh, that was Ivana, not Ivanka.
Oh.
I only remember that because Ivanka would have been like two in this. So.
I don't keep track of the Trump.
Yeah, memory. I questioned that too. I'm like, hold on. I think that's spelled wrong.
No, Ivana is her mother.
Gotcha.
Know thine enemy.
Well, so where do we go from here, you guys? Like, what if anybody's listening and wants something to go into next? Definitely, I would say to check out Chuck Palahniuk. Gosh, the writing style, if you like the writing style of this, definitely check out Lars von Trier. What do you guys think?
I really feel like there was just nothing really like this.
I know it.
It's the only thing I could say that would be similar is if you have read this and you have somehow missed the Hannibal Lecter novels, you'll enjoy them. And vice versa. If a lot more people, I think, have read Hannibal Lecter, if you enjoyed that series, you will enjoy this because they're on the same level of intelligent gore. It's intellectual and gruesome at the same time. It's not cheap. It's not the fast food of the horror genre. This is definitely the refined palate of the horror genre type of book.
Oh, Possum.
Possum?
I recommend Possum. I recommend Who's Watching Oliver.
I'm sorry, I'm assuming that's... I've never heard of that before, so I'm assuming...
It's a movie. It's on Prime. It's free. Okay. You should watch it. Ooh, that one's pretty nuts, but in like a different way.
I'm sorry, that might be my favorite segue ever.
Just Scream Possum.
What do you think, Evie?
I'm not much for reading anything that's like a stream of consciousness. There is this book I read a while ago that was called like Pen Pal. It's a collection of a bunch of journal entries and stuff. You can kind of see things going wrong behind the scenes. And some of it at the beginning is you realize something's wrong, but the kid doesn't. So I guess that's kind of similar. Mm. And then Kafka's Metamorphosis it's not similar to the story, but I kind of had a really good and introspectional kind of feeling about the story after I finished reading it. I think I read it a couple of different times because the ending where it's he dies and the family moves on and everything's happy sunshine. But oh, spoilers.
Well, if we're talking about stream of consciousness, and I'm going to be doing a review about this one. I don't know when this podcast is coming out, but I'm going to be doing a review of the podcast, Alice Isn't Dead. It is stream of consciousness. It is very difficult to explain, which makes sense because it's from the people who wrote Welcome to Night Vale. So if you enjoy the stream of consciousness type of thing, that's a good one too.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Oh, Enemy in 2006. It's got Jake Gyllenhaal in it. You might like that one too if you like this. It's very slow, but it's not going to keep your eyes on the TV like the movie of this one does, American Psycho. But if you like the kind of war there that Bateman goes through, you might like Enemy. But next time, I think we're going to talk about Hagazusa, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think I started trying to watch it, but it was, like, really late.
It's slow.
Yeah, I woke up in a random little parts of it to what I think was a three-way, except it was kind of like a rape or something.
What? Yeah.
All right, well, that's
okay,
going to be fun.
Okay, I'm glad you caught that. Okay. Because I did not catch that one the first time I watched it.
Okay, so it wasn't a dream. That's nice to know.
Yeah, it's pretty slow, but yeah, it's pretty intense. But I guess we'll be back.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Bloody Marys, where basically we just praise American Psycho in no particular order.
Yeah, which fits with the book, so.
And I am going to go drop off some movies.